There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
I love them. I know they like me, too. It's the egg farmers of this country. The egg farmers. And they brought thousands and thousands of eggs. I don't know if you can use them all, but I have a feeling with these young, very ambitious children, they're going to find a reason. They'll be gone. They'll all be gone.
Not the children. Not the children. The eggs, right? Which, by the way, watching, this is like when we had the turkey pardoning, the Easter egg roll at the White House. It is a nice contrast to being the commander-in-chief, the most powerful person in the free world as president of the United States. All the, you know, high-level, top-secret things that are being done, all these huge moves that are being done. And then, by the way, what else do I have on the schedule? Well, Mr. President, you also got to get out here and get with the National Egg Farmers. And we're going to bring some children out, and we're going to roll some Easter eggs. Well, actually, there'll be 30,000 people out there. So, no matter, maybe this is one of the things in our check and balance system, right, in our republic, that keeps people from getting too big of a head, which is, you know, which is a challenge with people in the White House, that at some point they think everything, you know, I decide everything. I'm the most important person in the world. That's right, Mr. President, but also on today, we need you to get out here with the egg farmers and the children and do the Easter egg roll. I think it's a beautiful thing. I'm not against it. I'm actually for it. I want more of that in our system than less of that in our system. And that's how we start Midday Mobile on a Monday, Easter Monday here. Speaking of which, here's some of the stats. Listen to this. So the White House lawn, just a few hours ago, the scene of the biggest social event of the year, the annual Easter egg roll, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump hosting today's festivities on the South Lawn for more than, here you go, folks, 30,000 adults and children who will stream through the gates all day. The main event is traditional rolling of hard-boiled eggs across the lawn, but the First Lady announced two new additions to the lineup of festivities, musical eggs is one of them, and a game of hopscotch named for her, Be Best Children's Initiative. So there's also a nook where Mrs. Trump and other officials will read storybooks and a station for kids to make greeting cards to send to U.S. troops. And I think that is a great thing. But yes, if you ever were, these are the checks and balances for your head getting so gigantic as president of the United States, no matter who's in that office, what party, whatever, get off the partisan thing for a second. And no matter who's in that position, yeah, I mean, you're president. You think, I'm president of the United States. Look at all this big stuff. I'm doing big stuff all the time. Yeah, you got a 9:30 with the kids and the egg farmers of America. Kind of helps keep things in check, doesn't it? All right. Coming up on today's show, lots to do. And speaking of the military, a real honor here as I get to talk to someone we've talked to from before they decided to row the Whoopi across the Atlantic. And we talked to the crew from Fight or Die as they rowed their rowboat 28 feet across the Atlantic. And now we'll get to talk about it on the backside, too, because Chris Kuntz from Fight or Die, you know, the team of four veterans that rode 3,000 nautical miles from the Canary Islands to Antigua, is right now, actually, I'd love for you to go see him, hanging out with Tom Claxton, our buddy, and the crew down at Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway, and they will be down there. You want to talk firsthand, you want to talk about what it was like to hop in the Whoopi and rode 3,000 miles, and also what's next for the Fight or Die team. We'll talk about that with him coming up in just about 6 minutes, but you can go by and see him in person as they are on site at Ed's on the Causeway. So go by, grab some lunch, and check that out. All right, so we'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. Plus, we'll check in with what's happening in Montgomery as the legislators return tomorrow. And we'll be joined by State Senator Chris Elliott. A couple different questions on votes, that lotto vote coming up. Also, what about the stats out for the growth in Baldwin County? What does this mean for Baldwin County and revenue coming into that area? We'll get into it. Plus, we'll get into some of the ethics bills and some of the other things moving right now in Montgomery. That's coming up at 12:30. Also, in hour number two of the show, we'll talk about an event coming up this weekend, the Shrink the Divide Conference going on right here in Mobile with Tim Smith. That's happening at 1:30 today. Plus, your phone calls at 343-0106. Text at 343-0106. And that's a good number to keep in your contacts and your speed dial, because coming up today, sometime between now and 2 o'clock, your chance to win Brian Adams tickets for the Shine the Light Tour coming to the Wharf Amphitheater on May 10th. You've got a Friday night show, 8 o'clock show, so it's not some kind of ridiculous midnight show that, like cool shows come around and then they're at midnight and I can't go to them. This is timed right for me. 8 o'clock show on a Friday night. Brian Adams, Wharf Amphitheater, tickets on sale now, Ticketmaster.com, Wharf Box Office, or charge by phone, 800-745-3000. You got a chance to win them coming up in the next hour and 50 minutes. So good luck there. All right. Coming right back, we'll check in with the Fight or Die team and Chris Koontz, who is on the causeway at Edge right now. If you get a chance, go by and see him. Go by and say hi.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:15, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and good to talk to this guy. Again, I think last time he and I talked, if I remember correctly, he was somewhere in the Atlantic. And I know there's a lot of places to be somewhere in the Atlantic, but he was somewhere in the Atlantic. That's Chris Koontz from Fight or Die Rowing Team joining us now and live from Ed Seafood on the Causeway. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Sean. How you doing? Hello, Mobile. How are you?
We're excited to have you back, man. You're like, I know you're out of Colorado, but we're adopting you.
Yeah.
We're going to adopt you. You're now going to be honorary Alabamian. You take that one?
There you go. Hey, I can take that all day long, man. I love this place. Everybody's been, Mobile's been awesome to us.
Well, we're so, and I want to go back to, people haven't caught that part of the story. You and I have been talking for a while because y'all were here before rowing across the Atlantic. Y'all were training out of Buccaneer Yacht Club here in Mobile County.
Yes, sir. We did about 3 or 4 weeks of training up here in Mobile, and the good folks at Buccaneer Yacht Club allowed us to use their facilities. And then we took our boat, drove her to South Carolina, put her in a 40-foot container and shipped her off to the starting line in the Canary Islands. We picked her up, rowed her back into Antigua, put her back in a shipping container, sent her to Miami, and I went down to pick her up, and now I'm back here in Mobile.
Hey, talk about it. I mean, so the Whoopi is here. The Whoopi is in Mobile?
Yeah, the Whoopi is in Mobile. It's actually sitting here at the Ed Seafood Shed with me right now. I've had a few people come by and take a look at it and ask some questions about it. And, you know, it's just been amazing. I was on the TV yesterday and this morning as well. The good folks at Fox 10 Mobile have been just amazing to us.
Yeah, they're good folks. And I think people need to, if they have a chance, if y'all are coming or going today, go see the Whoopi, because this was y'all's home and your transportation the whole way across the Atlantic. And it's how big is the Whoopi?
Well, she's 26 foot long, about 5 foot wide and 6 foot high. And she kept us afloat for 54 days, 9 hours and 3 minutes. So she got us across the ocean.
You know, when children have shared a room growing up with siblings and go, I don't have any personal space. I want to think about the four of y'all, with you and Bryant and Alex and Bo, all on that. Yeah. I mean, that you talk about no personal space. I mean, y'all were living on top of each other, man.
Yeah, you had a cabin and you swapped out, and another guy went in there for 3 hours. It's the old submarine hot rack. But it was an exciting time, and I got to see nature in its rawest form. And, Fight or Die has grown. We not only do we partner with Sturm Specialty of Military Psychology out of Denver University, we now have Marcus Institute for Brain Health that helps out with TBIs out of Aurora, Colorado. So we're starting to pick up some momentum here with helping out veterans with
post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain issue as well as reintegration issues.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, when y'all decided to do this, to take part in this Talisker Whiskey Challenge to row across the Atlantic, you and I were talking, you said this is to bring attention specifically to the PTSD issues for our veterans, but yeah. Also y'all were guinea pigs. Y'all got hooked up. Y'all were part of the study.
Yeah, we were. We actually completed psychological testing out there about every few days, did video, you know, we did a two-minute videotape on how we're feeling with this. Certain questions from the doctors there at Denver University, and it's all been culminated, and we're handing that over to Denver University, and they're going to hopefully use that to base on that to help veterans of the future.
Well, okay, let's talk about this too, because last time we discussed it, I want to ask you a few more questions about that, because y'all were in the Atlantic and y'all were talking on the sat phone, and I have some questions from then too, but I want to jump to this part. You told me before y'all left, you're starting this, but you were ready to hand off the torch to veterans to take this going forward. So next year, another team of veterans. Have you nailed that down yet?
Yes, we have a male crew for 2019, and we just got done recruiting four super awesome female vets for a 2020 crew.
Great.
So we're gonna get some girl power out there, and we're excited that this is, can grow and will grow and is growing.
Now, the nice thing is, y'all are the old oracles on this. As the teams in the future go out, they're going to sit down with you and say, okay, what can we expect? What will you tell them? Like the crew you have for 2019, what do you tell them to expect?
I think everybody had their own personal experience, and everybody's going to look at it a little bit different than me, from speaking just for me and me only. It was such a spiritual journey to see, the stars like we saw them. It's such a celestial view. It's amazing. To see a whale 5 feet under your boat, amazing. We had a pod of dolphins several times come to the boat, and one time they were here so long, I just dove in and started swimming with them. I mean, it's once-in-a-lifetime stuff. I would happily do that race again every year, because it was like an Atlantic safari for me. But it also healed me internally.
And let's talk about that, because if you're talking to other veterans, to give them an idea of where you found healing, recommend, is it the outdoors? Is it the challenge? What was it, Chris?
In the military, you're always tasked with a mission and you have to go accomplish, okay? And that's out on the battlefield with all your military-issued gear. Well, you don't get that stuff anymore, but you're still going out to a battlefield of sorts, and you still have a mission. And your mission is to keep trying to better yourself every day. Everybody has an ocean to cross. That ocean may be run a 5K. That ocean may be get a better job, read a book, find something in their life to tend for a goal, and then go after it.
We deal with a very, very sobering numbers here on the number of veterans that take their own lives every day, every year. And obviously y'all are doing this to bring attention to that. And what do you tell family members too? I mean, you can speak directly to the veterans, but also if you're speaking to friends or family members, what can you recommend for them to help out those people that are having a hard time reintegrating?
For us, just talk to them and understand what they're going to say might be a little bit different than what you're used to, but their norm is your abnormal and vice versa. I mean, I spent my life jumping out of airplanes at 12,500 feet. That was a daily occurrence for me. That was a normal part of my life. I used to jump out of helicopters and go and blow up doors and clear rooms and stuff like that, and that was my everyday life. But you come back to the civilian world and that does not happen. So you have to go through this transition of sorts, and you need to get the right people around you. For veterans, go talk to another veteran. I mean, that's your best medicine, because they understand you. They're going to know, like, you're saying something to blow off steam, or you're just saying something, because that's how you communicated back then. And for us, I found the more I talk with fellow veterans, the more at ease I am. The less I talk to veterans, the less at ease I am. So I try to surround myself with just that element of guys and gals who then walk the shoes that I've walked and the path I've taken.
It's a great thing to talk about and get that messaging out, that there are people out there that are, that understand what our veterans have gone through, and will talk with them about it. While I'm a civilian, friends of mine that served, and just people I've met too, talking with them, the best analogy I've ever had is if you've been driving on the interstate all day and then you get off and you're supposed to be riding on a surface street at 25 miles an hour, but you've been running 75 for the last 10, 12 hours, how hard that is to do. I can only imagine what it's like, just what you described, to go from doing the things you did to be standing in a checkout line at a grocery store. It seems like those worlds would be just so far apart. I feel for you. I mean, I don't know how you do that.
Well, you know, it's one of the things you have to, you kind of have to help yourself process things. But, you know, people with traumatic brain injuries, you know, like I've experienced one, and the frontal part of my lobe has been damaged, and that's your kind of, you know, do I care or not care button. And you have to realize when that is damaged, that you might be more prone to do something outrageous than normal, and it's only because that part of your brain is gone. And people have to understand that. I mean, I kind of shy away from society at times, but also when I do get in society, I understand what I've dealt with, that I couldn't have done that without finding the right doctors and the right people in my life to identify that problem I had. And that's been literally a lifesaver.
Let's talk about that, and talk about the doctors. You know, these people you've worked with here that are doing the research at the high level for TBIs and these brain injuries. What about people here along the Gulf Coast, elsewhere? Are the VA facilities equipped here locally to deal with that? What do you recommend to people that are dealing with those kind of injuries? Where do they look?
I would find a doctor in your area who's very well reputable. Also find one that's got a bit of training in it. The first doctor I saw was a civilian, and she actually educated the VA on post-traumatic stress. So going in there and seeing her for the first time was like taking a puzzle that was upside down, where you're only seeing the gray side, and that woman flipped that puzzle over for me, and I saw all the color pieces, and I could start putting things together, the reasons why I was doing what I was doing. That to me was the best. I mean, reach out to your fellow veterans, ask around. You know, I found this lady through a Vietnam veteran who saw me in my path of self-destruction, and he grabbed me by the back of the head, and he's like, "You know, you got to straighten yourself out, because you remind me of me, but I went to prison when I came back, and I'm not going to let that happen to you."
Wow. Wow, wow. If you're just joining us, talking to Chris Koons from the Fight or Die rowing team that finished the 3,000-mile row across the Atlantic in the Talisker Whiskey Challenge. Talking about the fun stuff more here, Chris, what was it like the day? Because last time you and I talked, y'all were a little over halfway. But I was wondering at that point, what was it going to be like when you got to see land ho, right? You got to see Antigua. Describe that day or that evening. When was it that you first saw land?
We came in, I believe it was February 4th, and it was in the afternoon about 2 or 3 o'clock or so, and we pulled into English Harbor, Antigua, and you come around this corner, you can't see anything, because it's like the island's got a little jetted-out peninsula, and you've got to kind of go around it and then take a right into the port, and then all of a sudden it opens up, and you have these magnificent yachts in there. It was like Battleship Row on Pearl Harbor, and they had helicopter pads, and then they're all lined up, and they started doing, you know, up, 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 up. The various ships were just making noises with their horns, because obviously this is a tradition there. Every year, you know, the rowers come in, and it was emotional, because you've seen all these people at your finish line, and you pull up, and people, I've been following you since day one. I didn't know. It gave me a hug. You know, you come back and you open up your Facebook page, you got all these private messages going, "Hey, thank you. You got my husband off the couch and got him motivated." I mean, it was such a swell of emotion. I mean, it was really overpowering. Probably one of the most overpowering emotional feelings I had, because, A, you found land, you accomplished this task, and then you start getting the feedback, because you're kind of isolated, obviously, for 54 days out there on the ocean. We really didn't get a whole lot. I didn't even know the government shut down.
Well, you're talking about isolating. People say, I'm going to really check out and take a vacation where I really checked out. Yeah, try the center of the Atlantic Ocean. I think that's the definition of it. But that's a good thing.
That was the beautiful part. You know, you didn't have to answer a text, answer a phone call, answer an email. You know, you didn't read the news. It was just you and Mother Nature. And, you know, you slept, you ate, and you rode, and you got to soak it all in. And it was, to me, it was very spiritual, and I would do it every year that I could. I loved it that much.
All right, well, let's talk about the new crew. You mentioned you got the crew for 2019 and 2020 with the female crew. What do we need to know about following them the way we followed y'all and supporting them? How can we help?
It's going to be no different. You just go to our Facebook page, Fight or Die, O-A-R, pun intended, or you can go to our website, www.usvetrow.org, and you'll read the bios of everybody, and you'll start seeing the new team coming in. The old crew, which is myself, Bryant, Bo, and Alex, we're going to kind of phase ourselves into operational managerial as we bring these four new gentlemen in to get them trained up on, you know, all the ins and outs of ocean rowing, give them our lessons learned, things we should have brought, things we did right, things we did wrong. And then at the same time, we've got a group of four young ladies who have stood up and accepted the challenge, and, you know, we'll get them together and get them ready for a 2020 race. So if you go to those two sites, our Facebook page and our website, you know, you can click donate, you can follow. You know, I would rather get a $1 from a million people than $1 million from one person, because I want everybody to realize what a community effort I want this to be, and it needs to be, because everybody has this person and these people in their communities.
Well, I appreciate it, and make sure to give those people my contact info. I can't wait to start talking to the 2019 and then the 2020 crew. And remind folks, too, today, if they want to check, will the crews in the future, will they be rowing the Wubby? Is it the Wubby go with them?
Yeah, we can use her a few times. We're going to take her in to Colorado. We're flying out one of the ladies that helped build it. So you can do some of the minor repairs. You know, our steering broke a couple times, so we got to get that back up and running, and replace the batteries, because batteries are rechargeable, so they don't hold their charge over a long period of time. So we get those swapped out. But just basic, refit it a little bit, and then we're going to introduce those guys to the boat, and then we'll keep her in controlled storage there, and then we'll start getting her out and training the next crew.
All right, good stuff. And people can come by and see you at Ed's. You're going to be there for a little while?
Yeah, I'll be here probably for about another hour. But okay, Please stop on by. I mean, I just had some oysters here, and they were amazing.
Oh, man. Get all the seafood you can while you're here.
I tell you, I live in the Mountain West. I know a good steak, but I miss my oysters, so I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, stock up, and make sure to tell Bryant and Alex and Bo, everybody, I said hello, and I can't wait to see y'all again soon.
Awesome, brother. Hey, thanks for everything you guys do for us, man. And thank you, Mobile, for being our adopted city. You guys have been awesome.
Oh, that's beautiful. We thank you. Chris Koontz from Fight or Die Rowing Team, and he is going to be at Ed's, like you said, for another hour or so. Stop by and see the Wubby. See the actual boat they rowed across the Atlantic. And we'll talk to the new team, I'm sure, pretty, pretty soon. All right, coming right back, Chris Elliott.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And big thank you to Chris and the whole crew from Fight or Die. And I'm going to have to learn the whole new crew's name, the 2019 crew, so I got my work cut out for me, which is okay, because you'll meet some of the, at least without my experience with meeting the team from this last year, meet some amazing human beings and some people that are continuing to give back after giving so much in their service to our country. If you do get a chance to stop by Ed's and see the Wubby, which cracks me up, because these guys, if you go see the guys that row on the team, even if you don't get there in person, and you see the kind of guys we're talking about, special forces, veterans, so many tours of service, and they name their rowing boat the Wubby, which it just cracks me up. They're a neat bunch of guys. All right. I also mentioned we'd talk to State Senator Chris Elliott as session gets started back up tomorrow, and he's in the studio now. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. The previous Chris was a lot cooler than this Chris. Sorry.
You saw the Wubby.
I'm glad I was listening to the show too, and I was like, "What is that?" And then I just got my answer.
There you go,
some robot. In real time.
Yeah, you know, like that boat. But people would say, "Well, it'd be a decent size for a bay boat, even though it's a rowboat." They decided to take that baby from the Canary Islands to Antigua.
It was cool. It had teeth on it, too.
Yes. Like the old, y'all, if you're pictured, you see the pictures, but like you'd had the old bombers and fighter planes, not jets, but fighter planes in World War II adopted that, the kind of the jaws on the front. It's good stuff. All right. Tomorrow, back to Montgomery?
Back to it. We start the day off tomorrow morning at about 9 o'clock in Perry County at the Perry County Correction Facility there.
Yeah.
It is a near vacant 750-bed correctional facility.
Now, when you go there, will you see that will be the only correctional facility in the state that doesn't have a bunch of knives, cell phones, and drugs in it, right?
That's right, because it doesn't also have a lot of prisoners
right
there. Right, it's nearly vacant. Yeah, the rest of them, we got a problem. I mean, there's no other way to look at it.
You saw the stats. I mean, and the thing is, the story from Thursday at Atmore, at Holman, that's not that. I mean, I've been doing this for years. That's not the first time that's happened.
It's not.
And I mean, they get all the stuff, they get all the contraband out, and they give it a little while, and they come back, and there's a bunch more contraband.
We got problems on several different fronts. We've got staffing problems. A lot of that contraband comes in through our staff.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is.
Good. That's what I said this morning. I mean,
It's not just folks throwing things over the wall.
Thank you.
It's getting smuggled in various different ways. We have a huge staff turnover problem. I mean, let's be honest, that's a pretty rough job.
Yeah, correctional officer is not a job that there are people. I had a list of, even though broadcaster was on the list as well, but the 10 worst jobs in America, we talked about this morning, number 6 on the list, corrections officer.
Yeah, it's a really rough job, and it's a very dangerous job in Alabama prisons, and we're going to have to do something about that. And it's a very dangerous place for the inmates, too, and that's one of the reasons DOJ has come down as hard as they have on us.
Let's explain that. Even though I've talked about it ad nauseum, but I still think there are people who have not heard this message. This is not the push from the governor, the push from Cam Ward and others who have been talking about this for a long time. It's not because they want to go soft on prisoners. It's if we get taken over by the feds here, this is going to be bad news.
It will break our budget if the feds take it over. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you look at what happened in California and think about how much better California's prisons likely were than the situation we're in right now. California, a very progressive state when it comes to corrections. But we have got – our situation has become so atrocious in reality and boots on the ground that the feds, if they do not see movement and movement like real soon – In the terms of 20 to 30 days from now, there's a very good chance we end up in federal receivership, and they don't care how much of your money they spent.
Right. So if I remember correctly, looking at California as the model federal receivership, they come in, y'all. They design the changes to corrections they think should be made, and then we, the people, the taxpayers of Alabama, pay for those. At the same time, they get those numbers back down by somewhat, I don't know, arbitrary is a fair word, but not based on time, sir. All those, they release people. They open up the doors and get people out of prison.
They can, and they can, but the scarier thing, if you will, to me, is what it does to our budgets, because they can spend any amount of your money they want to.
But it is not federal dollars. It's state dollars.
It's your money. I mean, it'd be like me grabbing your wallet and saying, hey, I'm about to go have a good time.
Yeah.
I don't care how much of your money I spend. And that's the problem that we're going to see, and that's what really is illustrated by this. And that's why, you know, the governor's term, we need an Alabama solution to Alabama problem, I think, is apt here. It's just, it has been a problem for so long, it's been swept under the rug for so long, that it is a monumental task, and it is going to require a variety of different approaches, one of which I think is the most cost savings, the low-hanging fruit, if you will, to begin with, and that's going to be using empty facilities.
You talked about this before. You mentioned that they're, because, you know, until you mentioned it, I thought the only solution was going to be troublesome because I hadn't even gotten started on building new facilities. But you say there are facilities that are not overcrowded in the state.
So the facility I'm going to look at tomorrow morning in Perry County is a Riley-era facility that was constructed under an agreement the Riley administration had with private industry to handle our prisoners for us, essentially. The economy turned as this facility came online, and the state never ended up housing prisoners there. Now, imagine being an investor in that private entity. This facility, I have on good authority, cost the private industry about $55 million to construct. It is for sale currently, somewhere between $12 and $15 million. This is a no-brainer.
Okay.
It's a 750-bed facility. It may have, and I'll look at it tomorrow, it may have 50 federal inmates that they're, you know, that they've got in there. They've managed to contract out.
So maybe 700 places still open.
A huge amount of capacity. This is the low-hanging fruit. This is where we start.
And then you can, number one, that brings it down, but you can take that to DOJ and say, look, we just did this.
DOJ is not about us fixing this problem immediately. They are about us fixing this starting immediately.
Okay.
And that shows that we are starting immediately. The second step is working with our county sheriffs. All across this state, in 67 different counties, we have sheriffs that run their county jails.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have empty beds sometimes. Sometimes they don't.
Right.
Sam Cochran doesn't have any room.
Right.
Hoss Mack does. I talked to him the day before yesterday about it. if the state will pay him a per bed per day allowance to house the prisoners, he'll do it. Well, guess what he's got? He's already got the jail cell. He's already got the infrastructure. He's already got the food. He's already got the corrections officers. On day one, I think over 67 counties, we'd have a number of sheriffs come on board, so much so that we could probably absorb another 500 prisoners if we spread
out of the 67 counties.
10 here, 50 here, 20 here, 100
here. So you're thinking maybe
here.
700 at Perry County, 500 with the 67 counties.
Exactly. And just by taking an outside-of-the-box approach, now we've moved the number 1,200 already. Just by looking at this with a business mindset, how can I fix this problem quickly? Mm-hmm. And then we can start addressing the other problems. The governor's budget has 500 new corrections officers in it. Sean, we can't find 500 people that want to go work in our facilities.
That's right why there's so many hours of overtime and ADOC and all that, right?
And that's why we have the turnover that we have right now. We can't keep the ones we have, much less hire new ones. While I understand the staffing issue, I think we've got to realize we've got a bigger problem than just staffing as a whole. We've got a cultural problem. We've got a systemic problem with the organization itself, and we're going to have to make some serious changes quickly and get in front of those other problems.
If you're just joining us, State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest here on Midday Mobile. All right, I've heard this though in the discussion. I'm really interested in your idea for short term, because this is I've been preaching about this for years. I felt like I was on an island, but now it seems like it's coming home here, because I don't want to turn out like California in so many ways. I've been told by Senator Ward and others talking about it that the reason why new infrastructure, because we added, asked the question, why can't you add on to what you got and these things? He said the cost and the issue is kind of what you're saying. It's staffing. It's the human part. He said with new technology and new prison technology, fewer corrections officers can guard or watch more prisoners. Is that seem valid in what you've seen?
It is, and technology is changing the way we do almost everything in our lives, and prisons are no exception to that. The problem is some of our facilities are not. You can't retrofit them to accept that.
And right, you're not the first. I mean, multiple people have told me the same thing, because I was like, can't you just put? They said, no, not really.
Not really. And anybody that's done any remodeling before will tell you sometimes it's more expensive to remodel than it is to start new. Mm-hmm. Well, that's essentially where we are on this. Now, I'm not suggesting that the facilities we have right now are useless at all. I think we're just going to have to augment them with some new facilities. But after we've got the low hanging fruit of the existing facilities and using our current capacity,
so this thing in Perry County can be purchased, you think, for
$12 to $15 million.
Because I think you can drive a pretty hard bargain, because when you build a prison, it's often like if you build a building that looks like a big ship down on the waterfront, or you build a baseball stadium, they're specific in use.
They really are, and especially in Perry County, where there's just frankly not a lot going on.
Right. The options are limited for those investors for who might come in and run that facility.
Ramada's not interested.
So the idea is state would purchase this, ADOC would be in charge of running it.
They would, and I think that when you look at what our bond rates will be as opposed to what you could get out of a real estate investment trust or REIT, for instance, to mm-hmm. finance these facilities, we're in good shape buying it and operating it ourselves. That's a function of government, mm-hmm. And that's something that we're responsible to do. Now, no part of this prison conversation would be complete without also talking about sentencing reform. Now, this is a touchy subject, okay? People like lock them up, throw away the key, and I get that. And if that's
the parole board's letting them out. So
they are, and that's another problem with this. And you have parole board members that have said on the record, what do you think the job of the parole board is? Well, it's to manage the prison population. No, it's not.
Right.
Absolutely, no, it's not. That is not your job. Your job is to look at each specific case and determine whether this person is safe to release back to society. But the problem is we incarcerate folks at a pretty high rate here in the United States. There's mm-hmm. no question about that.
Yes.
I am fine doing that, but the public has got to understand that that is expensive to do.
And that's not something, and we're going to run to the break, but that's not something that I've ever seen that people go, man, I'm all on board spending more on prisons. As I may have joked here with the lottery, because nobody's listening to me, that instead of it being for schools or now, schools and general fund, maybe Alabama should have the prison lottery. Maybe we should have the prison license plate, especially license plate helping prisons or no? Mm-hmm. All right, we'll continue our conversation with State Senator Chris Elliott and take your calls and text 343-0106. What would that look like? Helping prisons and the little sign on the plate? No?
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Quick reminder, too, if you're going to be heading on the causeway, get off the bayway, get on the causeway and go by Ed's Seafood Shed. Number one, grab some lunch. But go by and see Chris Koontz from the Fight or Die team and check out the Wubby, which still cracks me up. That's what they call their rowing boat that they took across the Atlantic. You want to see what they lived in for 54 days? It's right there for you to check out. Pretty cool stuff. Go get a picture of it. Send it to me on the text line at 343-0106. And in-studio guest, State Senator Chris Elliott. And speaking of the text line here, quite a few texts about what we're talking about in the prisons. This is interesting. People were saying, here's one that I think kind of tells a story that's I've heard from a lot of people, and this is the question of why we let things get so bad in our state. Now it escapes me, but I had the text earlier. Basically, you know, why do we let things get so bad here that then we have to address it, you know, in a kind of a all hands on deck, you know, emergency action. You know, it's this this idea that, where is it? There it is. How about from here on out, we set aside money for our prisons and roads and not let these things get to crisis situations?
You know, that's the responsible way to govern. There's no question about it. There are just so many different competing things.
And it's not popular. I'm going to say it's not popular. I mean, who wants to? Here's the problem, and this is the problem with so many parts of the legislative process and government. There's no big rah-rah about prison funding, but we've been going on and on about it, that this day is coming and it's finally here, and now we got to deal with it. But yeah, think about 2-3 sessions ago, if you were in Montgomery at that point, you'd said, I tell you what we need to do, we need to start funding these prisons. Everybody'd say, yeah, uh-huh, okay.
Well, and to Senator Cam Ward's defense, he has been saying that for quite some time. I mean, he has been leading on this issue when it was unpopular. He's taken a lot of flack on it because it was unpopular. He has, I mean, who wants that to be the thing that you get to work on?
Right,
you know, but he's done that, and now he is leading the charge to try to figure out the best way to get us out of a very sticky situation with a very short fuse with the DOJ and the feds looking at us.
Is he gonna? What about this? When you're going to see this Perry County facility tomorrow, is he's aware of this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think again, it's going to take a multitude of different approaches. I just think we ought to grab onto the low hanging fruit first.
Explain to people why something quick is important. I mean, this DOJ letter, we talked about it several times on the show, but I think people have forgotten about that. That's just a couple weeks ago it comes out, and it was a slam on Alabama.
It was a very big slam, but it was also, there was a stick at the end of it, and that is, either you show us concrete proof that you are moving in a direction to address these issues, or we the federal government are going to take over your prison system and spend whatever of your money we want to in order to bring it up to our standards. And folks, that's not something we want to happen.
I tell you what I'll do. I hadn't done it in a while. I'll try to Google one of those stories of what happened in California and put it up for y'all to read, because the first time I read it, it left my jaw hanging. I said, holy cow, we do not want that here. All right, a couple other issues here that, you know, tomorrow, will you be voting on a lotto bill tomorrow?
We will be voting on in committee, most likely on a lottery bill tomorrow. Now, that gets to be at the chairman's discretion as to whether or not we carry the bill over, but it is in the Tourism and Marketing Committee,
okay. All right.
Which is Senator Del Marsh's, the Pro Tem's committee, and there's some interesting things that go in that committee. For instance, we have Senator Allen's gun bill in that committee.
In
the Tourism and Marketing Committee.
Okay.
Senator Marsh exercises a certain amount of control on that, and I'm glad to be on that committee, because obviously tourism is very important to Baldwin County.
Yes, yeah.
But it also gets some odd ducks, if you will, in there sometimes as well, which are problematic. But we'll have Senator Albritton's bill up tomorrow for a vote, most likely. That is the paper-only lottery
Okay, yeah,
bill.
Let's explain the nuance, because there was the McClendon bill and the Albritton bill. It sounds like, from everybody I've talked to, the McClendon bill doesn't have the support. So it's the Albritton bill that is going to be.
Yeah, but I don't want to lose the McClendon bill yet, because it has been renamed the McLottery, and I think that's just hilarious. So he's even calling it that, which is hilarious.
The McLottery bill.
The McLottery bill. But the McClendon bill has all kinds of electronic gaming in it. It has provisions to buy lottery tickets and game on your phone. I think some of it is very progressive in looking forward as to what a lottery may look like, and it gives a lot of tools to keep that revenue source up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that needs to be our goal here. I think there are a lot of problems with that wide latitude in what kind of games we can have.
But wouldn't that be the second? Is this a dual thing? First of all, the vote would be for an amendment, right, to the Constitution that would show up in the 2020 ballot for us to say you can amend the Alabama Constitution to greenlight gambling, or right? Or is that simplifying?
It's not just gambling. It would be a lottery, and then it spells out in the constitutional amendment what types of lottery, and it includes a lot of that as well. And then I will give Senator McClendon an awful lot of credit for this because he's showing his cards to everybody.
Okay.
Then he goes ahead and publishes the enabling legislation simultaneously.
That's a second part, right?
That's the second bill that basically says, okay, if this happens, then this is what it will look like. All too often, voters look at a constitutional amendment and they say, yeah, that's great, but the devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. Right? What does it really look like? Well, Senator McClendon has been very transparent and said this is what it's going to look like. The problem is folks what don't like some of what it looks like.
Right, and we come back, we'll talk about that a little more in depth, but the basic takeaway is the McLottery bill gives these dog tracks, pari-mutuel betting places, the right to run some kind of lottery, video lottery.
That's correct, and I think it's going to end up looking a lot like video bingo, right?
Right.
It's not like bingo at all.
Right.
It's going to look like a slot machine. They're just going to call it a lottery, or it's going to be a virtual scratch-off, which
I don't know
if you don't get to scratch it, but that's a different issue altogether. But that bill probably will not move forward. I don't see that it's got the support for it. Senator Albritton's bill is probably about as vanilla as you can get in a lottery. And I think where the funding goes is about as responsible as it can be. It's going back to pay debt to the Oil and Gas Trust Fund. Our friends to the north like to call it the Alabama Trust Fund.
Yeah.
I continue to remind them where that money came from to begin with. And then it goes into the general fund to help prop up, which we know is a challenge every year. And one of the reasons we continue to talk about prisons.
That's right.
We have the money to fix it.
Okay, coming right back, more with Chris Elliott right here on Midday Mobile. We'll be right back.